ending.
Welcome in to another episode of Chiefs Focus Live. We have a show a little different today. We're in the playoffs, so we're going to take a look back at the 2023-2024 regular season. JP's got his new favorite segment, Stupid Comments from Stupid People. And we're going to talk a little injury report just because we had some guys get injured earlier in the week. And we just want to check in on that, even though that's usually a Thursday segment. My name is Quentin Morris. We got Thiz running the show in the background. And now a guy who will decide that he will forever live with the attitude of the Chiefs' low watermark of the year. It's the old man himself, JP.
That's me.
How are we doing today?
I'm good, man. I'm very good. I mean, I'm not, you know, it's cold here, but nothing like what you're dealing with, so I'm okay.
Oh, yeah. We got, like, 6 inches of snow, I mean, depending on where you live. And it's heavy snow, too. I mean, it was, you know, a bitch and a half to move it off the driveway.
Jesus. Our buddy Joe out in Hayes, Kansas got nailed. I mean, nailed. They got an ignorant amount of snow out there. It was crazy. Cold, snow everywhere. What's up, Will?
And I mean, we're only going to get more snow later in the week. We're supposed to get another round on Friday.
That's what I heard. And they said maybe Saturday. So just depending on. So it's actually Saturday, maybe 4 to 5 inches. So
I mean,
it really depends on how it moves, I guess.
I mean, we can just get into the weather a little bit. It's going to be fucking cold, too.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the coldest playoff games in the history of the NFL. I mean, 0 degrees at kickoff and winds of 20 to 30 miles an hour. So that tells you that the wind chill there will feel like it's about 25, 30, 40 below.
Yeah, and you got to remember, you know, you're in a bowl. So whatever it feels like outside, it's going to be colder inside the bowl, because anybody that's ever been to Arrowhead knows that. You know, that wind whips around. I mean, with -5 with a high of 12, I mean,
yeah.
Good luck, Miami.
Yeah. I mean, this is not 70 degree, 80 degree Miami right now. This is Kansas City weather for Kansas and real football weather. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's true. This is playoff football. I mean, this is what football was made to play in.
Yeah. The one thing I will say is when you're on the field at Arrowhead, and it's always been this way, it's just warmer when you're actually on the field. You know, you have the grounds, you know, they have heaters down there. The ground's actually heated. It's just it's about, depending on the day, it's usually about anywhere from 5 to 15 degrees warmer on the field than it is in the stands or even anywhere else for that matter. So the players, you know, that aren't used to that cold-ass weather are going to really feel it. And the players that are used to it, that play in it and practice in it, which that's what the Chiefs do. They practice outside. They play outside every year in this weather. They're used to it. And Mahomes is a snow guy. He loves this type of weather. So it's going to be interesting.
That was something that they talked about in the press conference today. You know, Patrick Mahomes said that, you know, growing up in Texas, he didn't get to play in stuff like this, but that this is football weather. And this is what happens. This is sort of that home field advantage that you can get, right? When you're being that team that you're going to have a Miami game, a Miami team, or even when you get teams like if the Rams were to come back here and play if the Cardinals or wherever, these late year games, whether it's the regular season or in the postseason, that's a home field advantage for you because you can practice outside all week. Where some of these warmer weather teams, Sao Cal, the desert, you know, it can get cold there, but it's nothing even close to this. So it's a real home field advantage for you because you can have time to prepare for it, and they're not going to.
Well, I can tell you right now, in the Southwest right now, it is pretty damn cold this week for the Southwest. And, you know, highs of like 46, you know, that's highs of 53. But when you get acclimated to that type of heat that you deal with out here, and then all of a sudden you get a cold front that comes in like that. And then on top of you, it's always windy here in the winter. So I'm freezing all the time and it's weird.
You got that old man skin.
Hey, fuck off. I lived in Kansas City for 43 years and went outside when it was 30 degrees. And honestly, just a shirt. And it never bothered me. Here, man, after a year, I was like, holy fuck, this shit ain't normal. You know, this is cold. Why am I cold and it's 60 degrees outside? This is stupid. But I've been here 10 years, going on 11 actually in May. and it just gets worse. But regardless, Miami's going to have a hard time with this. They really are. Their kicker's going to have a hard time because the ball's going to be like kicking a rock, and Butker's used to that. It's going to be different, man.
And we'll talk more specifics about this game on Thursday, so make sure you guys come back on Thursday to watch the to watch the show then when we get more details about the game. And
Will said he's going to be at the game.
Hey, good for you, Will. Make sure you bring that cardboard to stand on, you know?
Yeah. Man, you better –
layers.
Layers, buddy. Layers upon layers. I mean
– I have a buddy that said that when he goes to games like this, he would bring – he brings a, like, roll of – you know those, like, 1 foot by 1 foot, like, test carpets that you can get?
Yeah.
He says he got the shaggiest of shag carpets, and he got – brings that, like – 1 by 1 foot so he can stand on a shag carpet while he's at the stadium.
Smart idea. I mean, you know, they have for you, Will, they have, and I don't know what you're going to be wearing, but they actually have electric or battery powered warmers that you can wear. And you just, they have socks that way. They have everything. I mean, it might not be a bad idea, but just layer up, buddy, because it's going to be nasty. Moving on. What's our first segment?
Injury report.
Injury report.
So like I said, this is usually a segment we do on Thursday just because there's more information that comes out for guys that aren't practicing. But I do think that it's important to list the fact that the Chiefs are extremely healthy right now. There are only two guys that missed practice, Justin Ross with his hamstring injury, and Wanya Morris is still in concussion protocol. Kadarius Toney, L'Jarius Sneed, and Donovan Smith were all limited in practice. Everybody else practiced. We're full participants in practice. So that I just wanted to make that little side note here. The Chiefs are extremely healthy heading into the wild card round. And I was worried to see, you know, there were quite a few guys that went down in that Chargers game, and to see all the different guys practicing, I mean, you couldn't ask for much more than that heading into the wild card game. Chiefs have been pretty healthy all year. And they continue to into wild card round.
And honestly, to stay as healthy as they have, given the fact that they've had the shortest time between each game of any team in the history of the NFL, that's pretty amazing. I mean, they've been really lucky to stay as healthy as they have, given the – I mean, here it is again, a short week. Going into the playoffs, another short week. So it I think it plays a part in not only the – how great our medical staff is and our conditioning room is, but how these guys keep themselves together. They keep themselves in shape. And then also, you know, just the whole team as a vibe has been very good about this sort of thing. But it also shows you that the defense getting worn out a little bit, you know, from week 11 on is a good indication of why? Because they've had short weeks and they've been on the field 68% of the time for the majority of the season. So it is what it is. But they've made some changes, which I'm happy about. And it looks promising as far as Tony's coming back. He's going to be playing. Donovan Smith looks like he's going to be healthy and playing. We might get a chance to see McKinnon if we move on past this round. Which I'm sure we will. We're probably going to see McKinnon. I don't know about Brian Cook. I heard McKinnon may. I don't know about Brian Cook yet, which is hurtful. I'd like to see him back. But I heard McKinnon may be able to. I don't know yet, though. It just depends. They're trying. But, I mean, we've been really lucky. We really have. We've been really lucky. And look, we could actually throw in a few things really quick, just as a sidebar, off the injury report. Everybody that's playing this weekend, or I should say everybody that's not going to be playing, is people that we really don't want playing. So we're not going to see Sky Moore. We're not going to really see, honestly, with the fact that Tony's coming back and MVS is probably not going to see nearly as much play time, if any. That's a huge thing. That's a huge thing. So I'm pretty happy about that whole situation. And honestly, I mean, Pacheco is killing it right now. So
that was a big one that is important to see. I like to see that Travis Kelce wasn't on, like he didn't get anything done. So, you know, I know that Kansas City has some guys on the IR, but everybody does. But I just think it's really positive that at the start of the week, your injury report's pretty clean. Whereas Miami, on the other hand, is not. And like I said, we'll see how that develops later in the week for both teams. But as of right now, on Tuesday, you should be feeling pretty good on that.
Absolutely. Right. Tyreek Hill is not doing too well, by the way. He got banged up really bad last week or this last game. We don't know if Mozart's going to be back. And if he is, they said he's going to try and push himself to be back. But if he does, he's not going to be anywhere near 100%.
Yeah, only time's going to tell on this. Let's head to your favorite segment, your new creative Love segment, it. An opportunity for you to just crap on people because that's just what you do. Hey, the stupid comments, fun. Stupid people. Yep. Take it away.
So today there was a tweet put out about MVS, and the tweet read, drum roll, please. I think Thiz has this actually up on as a banner up on our show, but I'm not really sure. But the tweet basically said, MVS made $478,000 a catch this season. Now, the replies to this were fucking phenomenal. I mean, I don't know any other way of saying it. I got to tell you, I'm going to change the name of this to the Casuals of the Gridiron, because I got to be honest with you, if people don't understand what that tweet meant, then they really don't know football. But Thiz, if you got a second, can you put up some of the replies to MVS made $478,000 a catch, please? Because this was comical. He said, what? Jokes set aside. What about the drops? That's insane. Talk about dropping money.
Oh, my God.
Man, he could have been so much richer if he actually remembered how to catch a football. That was a dramatic pause. I just figured it out as $2.7 million in drops. So these people actually assume that he was getting paid per catch. Per catch.
Oh my God, dude.
That's like
when I say that, you know, my hero is Chase Daniels because he got paid like $300,000 per pass. It's like, yeah. No, that's just what he made, and you divide it by what he actually was able to produce on the field.
I actually asked one guy, I said, you do realize that he lost no money, correct? No, I didn't, but he should have. I said, dude, they're basically saying that out of the 21 catches that he had, that made it for the $9 million that he's making. So nobody gets paid per catch. Come on now. Here we go. I'll do it for $1,000 and get more catches. Damn, bro, it didn't make a cent. He needs donations for real. Bro has to have lost at least $2 million in drops. What the? I mean, honestly. And you wonder why people get frustrated, man, on Twitter. Yeah. This is why people get so fucking annoyed. Because all these crackers that are talking about understanding football and understanding contracts and the CBAs and everything else, they don't know shit. One guy, and I don't know, he was one of the best, and I don't know if Thiz was able to put that one up yet or not, but he's got a page, and his page is called The Real Last Take. And I'm going to look up this really quick because it's actually kind of funny. He actually said something to the effect, this was on another deal. This was on something else. Chris Jones had posted. No, this is what he said. I'm sorry. He did say this. He said he keeps replying back to these tweets, really ignorant things. But he posted something along the effects of, wow, he really didn't make any money. He just basically gave his whole paycheck away. Are you fucking kidding me?
Sometimes the world is like that, you know. Sometimes the world is just like that. We all need to take a deep breath.
I mean, there were 75 comments on that tweet, and probably 40 of them were paying. That motherfucker didn't make a dollar. Man, he lost $2 million this year. How do you do this? Honestly, how do you people get? I don't know how you function daily. I really don't know how you get through the day. But regardless, it is what it is. Casuals of the Gridirons, that's the name of the segment going forward. That's where we're going to make fun of people. We're going to do it at least once or twice a month. And I'm going to collect all of the names of people that say stupid things on Twitter. and then we're going to move forward because it's funny and it gives you an idea of how casual people really are. If there was a contract out there that you got paid $478,000 a catch, I guarantee you everybody be jumping on that bandwagon. They'd actually catch a football. And I bet you there wouldn't be very many drops either. So let's just, come on, people. Let's use our brains just a little bit. Anyway, Philip got some credit today from Dove Kleiman, which I understand, you know, he actually credited what you said on Twitter, which was pretty amazing. And I know why he did it. The guy's a fucking, I don't even want to get into what he is, but he got his ass in some trouble for stealing tweets and stealing different things and then putting them out. So I thought that was part of his the comic relief of him as well. But anyway, moving on. We had to get that segment out because it's funny. We're going to do it every week or at least twice a month. And it takes a little time to build up. I'd like to get like 5 or 10 of them at one time and then have them all ready to go. That way we can put them all out at one time. Moving forward, there's been some coaching changes in which we knew was coming. Mike Vrabel, I knew was going to get fired. I mentioned this on a couple of shows back that I heard he was on the hot seat. Everybody assumed that he was going to New England when he got fired. It was the immediate assumption that he was going to New England. Well, today, Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick and the other coaches had their yearly meeting, and it went on as off-season as usual. So right now, there is no changes in New England.
I don't think there's going to be changes in New England. I haven't been very convinced by a lot of it. Now, I mean, obviously, in an hour, we could get a report that Bill Belichick gets fired. But correct. I just think that, especially if I think what has to happen is that Bill Belichick has to give up some of his power in the player acquisition form, because I still think he's a hell of a football coach, especially on the defensive side. If he gets his offensive guy and he gives up some of that player acquisition stuff, I think the team will be better, right? I think he's chasing that. Bill Belichick's still chasing to be the winningest coach in NFL history, so I think they stay there. Let's just run through some of the coaching vacancies. So we've got the Tennessee Titans, who fired Mike Vrabel earlier today. I don't see how you can think you can find someone better to really advance that roster. That roster's bad, but we'll get back to that. Yeah. So we've got the Titans Titans job's open. The Falcons job is open. Chargers and Raiders are both open, and the Panthers job is open. My quick bit
in
on
Washington,
the Titans,
for that matter.
And Washington, yes. So there's those six. So I think the Titans job is not attractive at all. That is not a good roster. I don't believe in that young quarterback, the Mayo man, that they drafted. And who really knows what else is coming out of there? I think there's going to be a lot of turnover on that roster. Derrick Henry is probably gone. They gave him the mic at the end of the game.
He said goodbye.
Talked to the crowd. So yeah. I think he's gone. That roster is going to get completely turned around, and it's unfortunate for them that
no, they're not.
You've got three teams in the AFC South that are starting to figure it out, or are at least looking in a positive direction, and the Titans are just there. Actually, maybe you could push back on this. I think the Atlanta job is very attractive. I think it's more attractive than the Chargers job. I think it is the most attractive job right now.
Well,
I know the Chargers have Justin Herbert. The Falcons have a top 10 pick, and look at all of the weapons on the offensive side. They don't have a bad defense. Their defense was just used a ton and got worn out. They were a good defense early in the year, and then they got exposed because they were out there so long. Atlanta is a good job to have. Atlanta should be if the number one coach, whoever you think the number one coach is, whether it's the offensive coordinator from the Lions, or do you think it's the Harbaugh brother, whoever, you should go to Atlanta and you should get your quarterback, because you're drafting at 7 overall. You're telling me that you can't get down to 4 or 5 and draft, or stay at 7 and get one of these guys? Sure. Well, you may not get a Caleb Williams, but you don't think that you can get a Penix Jr., or you don't think that you can get a Bo Nix, or the any of these, you know, not, I want to say lesser tier, but maybe not, because there's so many quarterbacks available this year. If you think that one of those, you know, 3 to 7 quarterbacks on the list, right? Because you're not getting a Williams or a Drake May from 3 to whatever of the first round quarterbacks that go. If you really believe in one of those guys, you're set. I think that they have a perfect opportunity in Atlanta, because that division is still bad. So Atlanta to me is the most attractive job.
Yes, Will, they do. The Chargers do have a top 5 pick in the draft. They only won, I think, 4 or 5 games. So they're right up there in the top 5 or top 7. The one thing I will say about the Atlanta job, and I've heard, now I'd have to look at the numbers, but I heard their cap is fucked. It's one of the worst in the league. So if that's the case, and it's still the case, that's something that coaches have to look at when they go into this, because...
Oh, yeah, the Chargers have a bad cap situation.
Well, I'm talking about the Falcons. I'm talking about the Falcons. I heard they're bad. I heard the Falcons were really
bad.
They're
not really paying anybody. I couldn't tell you one big free agent that they've signed.
They're paying for mistakes from the past, and they're still paying for those mistakes. And I heard it was really bad this year. Now, I don't know what it's going to look like next year, but this year, from what I understood, it was pretty rough. So, and the Chargers are fucked too.
The Chargers have really
I looked
bad
at their numbers. And, oh God, they got $100 million in money going out to
like 6 players. They talked about it on the broadcast during the Chiefs game. So
yeah, it's insane.
I think the Atlanta job is the most attractive job in the offseason, and I don't understand how this is not a talking point everywhere else that you look.
If you know, here's the thing too. I know Washington to a lot of people doesn't look attractive, but given the fact that they have a new owner, and this guy's willing to make all of the changes, and he's really stepped out of the realm of what people normally do when it comes to, which I like what he's doing. I have to give him credit. He doesn't know what he's doing when it comes to this, so he has hired people that do.
Yeah, he went out and hired a baseball or a NBA executive who was in charge of the Golden State Warriors run.
Correct. And he's decided that he's going to bring people in that understand what to do and how to do it, and bring in the best people for the job, whether it be president, GM, head coach, everybody. So I like what he's doing from that aspect. Sounds like right now, from what I've heard, they are cleaning house completely. They're not one coach is coming back. So if that's the case, then it's going to be a do-over basically in Washington once again. But they have some great players on that team. They just need the right coach and somebody that can go in there and do it the right way. You know, you've got some great offensive weapons. You've got some great defensive weapons. Even though they were dead last this year somehow, they still have some great players on that team. Collectively, they got good players. They just weren't utilized enough or correctly, and utilized way too much, I should say. Similar to us, you know, their defense was beat down. I don't know, man. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't believe John Harbaugh is coming to the NFL. He got $150 million offer from Michigan.
I still think that he won because he won the national championship. His brother has a Super Bowl ring. He won against him. I think that he still wants that, the ultimate prize of the Super Bowl. Plus, he's got to be frustrated with the NCAA rules, because there's a good chance he's going to get punished again with all the crap that he's had to deal with. So I think that there's an opportunity for him in the NFL. And if he likes a quarterback, I don't think he comes to the AFC West. I think Atlanta would be a perfect spot for him.
Well, I mean, you know, if he comes to the NFL, people historically, owners that have been around the NFL long enough know that it takes a special kind of coach to come out of college after all this time and be successful in the NFL.
And he's done it before. Took a team to the Super Bowl.
I know, but it's been a long, long time. And I think it takes a while to get acclimated back to being in the NFL. Pete Carroll did it. You know, Marv Levy did it. There's a lot of guys that jump back and forth. And then, you know, I mean, look what happened to fucking, what's his name? The one that Trevor Lawrence had for a little while. What was his name?
Urban Meyer.
You know, I mean, it's a hard transition for a head coach, especially when, look, man, why would you, if somebody's going to offer me $150 million on a 10-year deal and I don't have half the stress that I have or that I would have going into the NFL and worry about my job being taken away from me? The difference is this. In college, it's not guaranteed money unless you somehow get it, which it's very rare that you got a coach that gets guaranteed money like that. In the NFL, it is guaranteed. So similar to the Raiders, you know, they have two coaches that they're paying for the next 10 years, an ignorant amount of money. So if he gets a guaranteed deal in Michigan, he's not leaving. I don't even know if he'll leave if he doesn't get a guaranteed deal.
I just think
if he gets five of the 10 years guaranteed, he's going to stay there.
Yeah, I think we're just I don't think we're ever going to agree on that until we see whatever decision, because I think that's a guy that has the ultimate. He's like that ultimate competitor. I think the NCAA, he's going to get more drama there with the portal and all the extra work you have to do in recruiting. If a team offers him an opportunity to come back to the NFL, I think he's going to take it, especially because he just won the national champion. So it's like, I've reached the peak of college. I want my opportunity to come back to the NFL and prove it there again. And I just really think that Atlanta job, you get whoever that ends up being, Jaden Daniels, you know, Bo Nix, whatever quarterback that goes there, you get the right system there, that Atlanta team. there are some good jobs here available in the NFL. I personally, and we've gone back and forth on this one too, I think the Raiders stick with their interim head coach.
Why the fuck are they doing? Why are they going out and looking for people then? Why are they bringing in people that everybody else? No, but okay, I understand that. Then you go and you look at people that nobody really wants. Okay, if you're really interested in keeping the guy that you have, don't go after the top prospects. Prospecting head coaches in the NFL. Don't go after.
You have to make it look like you tried.
I mean, I hope he's. I mean, I would hope that they keep him. I'm not a big fan of his in some ways. The only thing I don't like is the fact, and I don't like when anyone does this. Fucking stop talking in third person. I hate that. I fucking hate that.
Good. I'll write that down. So whenever I want to piss you off even more than I usually do, I'll start talking about myself.
It'll set me over the.
I'll be like, man, that Quentin guy really knows what he's talking about. What a cool dude. You should be friends with him.
Man, I mean, I don't know what it is. It's just a condescending, arrogant fucking way of talking, and I can't stand it. And he does it in pretty much every press conference, and I am lucky enough to get to see them all. So it's just very difficult to sit and watch somebody say that shit over and over and over again. And I know that grates on a lot of people. That's just one of my pet peeves. I can't stand it. Has he done a good job with them? Of course he did. He ended the season with a winning record for him, for his tenure, 5-4. That's not bad for somebody that stepped into a shit show. So you can't complain and actually bench Jimmy Garoppolo and brought in a rookie. Did an okay job, not complaining. He brought the defense up in a great position, really. So if he gets a job, that's great. I think Al Davis would be a dumb fuck for not doing it because he let Rich Bisaccia go, and he knows that was a mistake.
And I think that's why he sticks with his interim coach this time.
He should.
My big contention there is I think that he sticks with them because he regrets letting that guy go and bringing in an outsider that, you know, continued to ruin his franchise.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, Mark Davis does some stupid shit. Who knows? I know he's going to get a different GM. He's not going to stick with Bailey. So, or whatever his name, Champ. What's his name? Champ Lewis? What's Champ something? But anyway, I don't think they're going to stick with him. But regardless, moving on. There, you know, you got Atlanta that's going to be looking. You got the Chargers. You got all these teams, and you got so many coaches that are available out there. Who do you think is going to go to the Chargers? Who do you think will end up with the Chargers this year?
I don't know.
Oh, by the way, real quick, Josh McDaniels, from what I understand, is talk, and that may have been a reason why Belichick didn't leave after their meeting, because Robert Kraft really likes Josh McDaniels. And if he gets a job again, the only place he's going to get a job is in New England with Belichick and Robert Kraft.
Yeah.
And that was a point of contention for Robert Kraft, I mean, for Bill Belichick to stay. So maybe that's what's happening. I don't know yet.
The
I don't know why anybody likes him. I bet his wife doesn't even like him. There's no way his wife likes him. I bet his kids don't like him. His neighbors don't like him. I bet his dog just bites him when he walks in the door. Cat probably scratches him in the eye. Josh McDaniels is a very unlikable guy. It just is what it is. He's the Nick Sirianni of OCs. That's who he is. Yeah. Hey, real quick, I brought that up. You know, if you're the owner of the Eagles and you watch your team completely collapse and lose five straight, do you consider making a move and saying, wait a minute, we do have Mike Vrabel out there, and this is a great fucking team for him to coach. Should we make that move now? I know it's only been 2 years, but we know that our coach is not a signal caller, and he doesn't draw up plays, and we got two very young guys that are.
Yeah, I don't think you make that move this year, but I think if next year you have another disappointing year or another really disappointing stretch, then I think you have to pull the trigger on it, because – you know, then you start asking the question, what does this guy do for you? And because he's not a signal caller, I think that's a question. You know, I think in July, when we're doing a show and we're doing okay, who's on the hot seat to start the year? I think Nick Sirianni is going to be on the top of the list.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, but I don't think you can do that now.
He's a hype man. He's a glorified hype man.
When your roster's really good and you've got a good system around you in terms of other guys, then I think that works. So, you know, I think maybe that.
Oh, Vrabel's a good head coach. He's actually the top prospect right now. So
I can't believe that. I really can't believe that Vrabel was fired when he has really taken that team up a notch, and he has really driven that team with a lack of talent up. He took that team to an AFC championship game when the three talent playoffs on that team was not AFC championship worthy. So yeah.
Look at the quarterback he had.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
He's a backup quarterback. That's
he had Ryan he Tannehill in the Mayo, man.
Yeah, and he did a great job with what he had. And look, I'm sorry, but he's a good coach. He's done a great things. He beat us. I mean, he's a good coach. I heard that he was on the hot seat. I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago on the show. And boy, if that didn't come true, because he was definitely on the hot seat, which is, you know, it is what it is. Owners do weird shit. You know, they sit back, they look at things, and they don't really see the big picture sometimes. It's been a problem with the Titans. It's been a problem in Carolina. As we know, three coaches fired halfway through the year, 3 years straight. It's just one of those things to where sometimes I think owners need to keep their fucking selves away from it. That's why you have a team president. That's why we're so really lucky to have who we have, because Clark Hunt's smart enough that he knows, okay, I don't know football as well as these guys do, so I'm going to hire people that do. Good people, good managers delegate to good people.
Yeah. You hire football people to do football things. Let them do the
exactly.
football thing.
Exactly. So, I don't know. It's strange, but looking at the Chargers and looking at the situation they're in, what coach would want to come to the Chargers in the AFC West with Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and then you also have Sean Payton to contend with, and the Raiders that may be a better football team than everybody gives them credit for?
Yeah. I don't know if there's one specific coach that comes to mind. I think the only reason you want to go to the Chargers is because of Justin Herbert. So I think it will be an offensive guy. I don't know if it ends up being the Lions offensive coordinator. We haven't really seen who's the hot list guys, right? We haven't seen Mike Vrabel's going to get a job. He should get a job. If that offensive coordinator from the Lions wants one, he's going to get a job. Other than that, because it was such a down year in offense, and it just overall over the entire NFL, I don't know if there's one coordinator that really stands out that was like, man, this is the next guy, right? So
someone
like that. And like I said, I don't think Harbaugh goes to the Chargers because they're not really a win now team. And when you're the number one guy, you're the most sought after guy, you can be a little bit more picky. So
yeah, right now I think in the NFL, Vrabel is the most sought after guy. And you know what? I think the difference between Vrabel and a lot of other coaches is that, yeah, he's a defensive minded coach, but he knows offenses very well. And he understands offenses. He teaches the offensive guys. And that's something that you don't get a lot out of defensive minded coaches. Look at Bill Belichick. He's a great example of that. He's not a great offensive minded coach at all. And he's terrible in the draft. So especially on the offensive side. So I think that's a big lure for Mike Vrabel, is the fact that he's good on both sides of the ball. He knows what the hell he's doing. He's going to be a coach by the end of this week. He'll be somewhere.
Someone will hire him. I've got no doubt with that. Okay. Let's move on to our next segment. This is something a little bit different. You know, regular season's over, so I wanted to take a look back on the good and the bad together, sort of a high watermark of the year and the low watermark of the year. We went through and we picked out just a little bit of some of the stuff that happened throughout the year. JP, why don't you give us a start? Let's start positive. What was your like highlight, the number one moment, number one play, number one game, just something that when you look back at the 2023-2024 season, you're going to be like, that was awesome.
You know, I don't know if it was one particular game, but I was tossing this one around. I had two directions I could have went with this. I wanted to give it to Pacheco because he is such a dynamic player. He's learned how to catch out of the backfield. He's put up almost 1,100, or if not over 1,100 yards, all-purpose yards, or right at 1,100. He's just a great player all the way around, and even played through his injuries and did very well. But I have to give it to fucking Rashee Rice, because that guy came onto the scene, made everybody else look bad, and he's a rookie, and he didn't fall into the trap that everybody else fell into. Number one, he didn't lose the trust of Mahomes, which is first and foremost. Don't lose the trust of your quarterback. Number two, he made up for his mistakes, and he made himself look like a star. And I think that he was like the high point of the season for me. I mean, he really was. In fact, I think if I had to give him a game, it was that 100-yard game that he had, because it solidified the fact that he is a number one wide receiver in this league as a rookie.
He became that guy in a lot of Chiefs fans. So I'm there with you. I want to make that the fumble in Germany, fumble six.
Yeah,
I think when we look back at the season, and I wanted this segment to be like, what are you when you're sitting around the campfire talking football in June, what are you going to talk about? And you'd be like, damn, remember when the Chiefs went to Germany and just got their payback against the guy that wouldn't shut the fuck up? You remember that? That to me is that season high mark. It's you're going to talk about that. I mean, and the fact that it was against Hill in Germany, it was that game that nobody wanted to be played in Germany because we wanted it to be here in Kansas City. It was the not only did they get the fumble, but then there was the pitch back to then make it. I mean, so awesome. It was like, not only did you get the fumble, but then there was like, I was freaking out when it happened. So there was that.
With your three hands.
I mean, it was the jump off the couch moment. So yeah. I think that was that was like the high watermark of the season.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
that was awesome. So what was your low watermark of the year?
Honestly, I mean, it was just MVS. Every ball that was thrown to him. I mean, it didn't matter what it was. He couldn't catch it. Any particular game. I mean, he cost us a game that we could have easily won. It was just him in general. I mean, he did not play well. He made a lot of money for playing very badly, very poorly. And then he pissed off Mahomes. And when you tell your quarterback that throws a ball 3 inches out of your turning radius and you miss it, tell him to throw the ball better when your quarterback's under pressure and you can't catch that. I'm kind of done. I think that was the low point for the year for me when he told Mahomes to throw the ball better.
Yeah.
Over the middle there, that little 7-yard pass that he dropped.
I think I'm staying in the same room. I'm just going to go with Kadarius Toney as sort of my low point. I just think that he was talked about all offseason as he was supposed to come in. The Chiefs talked about him being a superstar, and I know that a lot of it was hype. And I get that, right? You're Kansas City, you're a football team in the offseason. You want to get discussions going about the positive, you know, points of your team. And he didn't do anything for this team. Like, let's be real. Kadarius Toney did not have a single positive impact on a play, on a game. He caused two interceptions, one of which directly led to the loss of your first game. And so I think that was probably just the low watermark for me, was just that sort of
all the hype, and then it went down to shit.
All the hype, and you were like, boom, this is where he's going to be, and he never got close to it. So that's the low watermark, is that just the disappointment there.
Yeah. And the season's not over. We know he's coming back.
No, he's done
good things, you know, as far as
the playoffs. And who knows? He could have, in the playoffs, he could have a Super Bowl-esque, you know, punt return where he has that one big play, and you know, it makes it to where you see, okay, this is the guy that we're supposed to be. And heading into next year, you could be like, if he's your number three wide receiver, you should be happy, right? Yeah. Like, you know, there could be one of those moments. But for the regular season and in the off season heading into it, I think that was definitely something that I was really disappointed in. And when we talk about this. When we talk about this season moving forward, I think that's going to be one of the big points that we continuously talk about, is sort of the what if factor for Kadarius Toney.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I was looking up MVS. You know, he had 21 receptions for 321 yards or 318 yards or something like that. It was terrible numbers. But he was targeted, I think, almost double that. So, I know it doesn't seem like it because he did so poorly all year long and it looked like he was non-existent for the most part, but he was targeted. Let me look at his stats. Let's see. He was targeted, 46 times for 21 catches. 46 times he was targeted and caught the ball 21 times.
Yeah.
For 315 yards and one touchdown. That's fucking disgusting.
It really is. I mean, there's no excuse for it, right? I mean, it to be quite frankly, we know, we've talked about this endlessly for months at this point, literally months, about the wide receiver room and pretty much everybody involved in it. And Rice has been the, you know, bright shining star that has come out of that room. Fortunately for Kansas City, there's going to be a lot of wide receivers coming out of the class. If I continue to say the word Michael Penix Jr. is a future Kansas City Chief, then it'll happen. If it doesn't happen, then I blame you for not saying it enough. Let's do one more round of highs and lows.
Okay.
What would be, if you were to pick another high watermark, another really just positive moment, play, game, what would it be?
The Pacheco game that he ran for 156 yards and then caught another, I think it was 37 yards. It was just a couple of weeks ago, and I can't remember which game it was, but he had just a lights out game. And, you know, he had two huge runs, 137, one was 37, one was 35. He just, and of course everybody knows he came off an injury after that game and he just fucking destroyed the field. That kid has so much upside and everything he does is just, he never really has a negative play. And when I look at his numbers, just to give you some perspective on this, his numbers are fucking stupid. On the season, he averaged 4.6 yards a carry. There was games that he had 6.1, 5.0, 5.8, 5.8 again. I mean, insane. At one point in one particular game, he was over 7 yards a carry on like 12 carries. That kid is just a powerhouse. And now I'm not going to give all the credit to him because the O-line has really helped, you know, open up those holes. But he understands how to absolutely, Karlofkas has been. He knows how to open up a hole and or find a hole and get through it now. And that makes me happy. And I agree with you, Joe. Karlofkas, 10.5 sacks in his second season. Lit the board up. There was no doubt about that. But that one particular game, Pacheco just, he tore the field up. He did it all season, even injured, but that game there, he solidified who he was.
I mean, yeah, there was a real scary moment when we heard he was going to have shoulder surgery. And we weren't really sure about the timetable of it.
Yeah.
You know, it was very murky there for a little bit as to what was happening. And cause even the surgery, you know, it was like, oh, he had surgery, by the way. You know, it was like, you know, Friday night news dump that he had surgery. And it's just like, oh, is this it? Because this was the time when Kansas City still hadn't really found anything on offense yet. It was literally Pacheco was the offense. Yeah. And so that was scary. I think you're right. Pacheco, I mean, just once again, really shows that he you know, runs like a Scooby-Doo villain and is ready to play. And he is just an awesome part of this team.
Guy runs like he stole something every time he gets on the field.
Yeah. One of my high water marks, positives for the year. Can we have a real conversation for a second, JP? Can we get real? Sure.
Let's do that.
The Swifties, man. Come on.
Oh, yeah. They were great.
Okay. Come on. All right. I know that a lot of people got upset at this. Come on. It's funny. It's cool. It's hilarious. And when we look back at the season, it's the Kelce Swiftie season. Okay.
Absolutely.
It's funny. No, what a great story, Mark, to have on your football year, right? You got a bunch of people that Travis Kelce's jersey sold out in 0.5 seconds and crashed the website because people kept buying stuff. It's funny.
And it went up too, by the way.
Don't be a hater, JP. It's
funny. I'm not. It is funny. And I have never said a negative thing about it. That was Caleb that hated it. I absolutely do not have an ounce of problem.
I don't need the hate in the chat right now because everybody in the chat knows that shit was funny and you laughed.
It was
okay?
funny. It was funny.
Let's
and
all
here's
acknowledge
the best
it.
Part about it. You know the best part about it, Quentin, is the fact that she is dead serious about all this shit. This isn't, you know, everybody thought it was publicity and everybody thought it was a stunt. I can tell you now, after the Golden Globes Award, definitely wasn't a stunt. Because when Jill Coy decided to make a comment about Travis Kelce and how many times she's shown on screen, she got pissed. She gave him the face, man. I mean, she almost had the whole Swifty crowd diving on the stage after him. It was almost a Will Smith moment. I thought she was going to go up there and smack the shit out of him, but she didn't. That's a cool thing, man. I mean, you brought in a shit ton of people that didn't even know the fucking Chiefs were, didn't know how the football worked, didn't know anything about it. They're starting to learn. They're asking crazy questions. And they're not dumb questions because they just don't know. It's just a line of, you know, a line you got to cross or put a line in the middle of it because they don't know what a first down is, you know, what this is, what that is. But these are all young girls that have never watched the game of football, and now they're all into it. They got their boyfriends becoming Chiefs fans now. All these
anytime we can expand the kingdom,
fans.
I'm down for it.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm happy with it. I mean, it didn't hurt my feelings a bit. Hey, man, Travis is healthy. And everybody wants to say, oh, that's what he had, why he had a bad season. Number one, he didn't have a bad season. But number two, he was injured all year. Had nothing to do with her. Nothing. Nothing to do with this girl. If anything, if you remember, prior to him really getting injured in week 6, when he was really starting to feel everything, or week 7 it was, every time she was on the field, he was over 100 yards. Or every time she was at a game. 124 yards and 2 touchdowns, 120 yards and a touchdown, 110 yards. No, had nothing to do with that. The girl made him better as a person, and he's going to continue to get better as a person and a player. He needs rest. He got the rest. Don't be surprised if he doesn't show out in this Miami game. Don't be surprised if he doesn't put up 100 yards.
All right. So. One more.
What's your negative?
One more round. Why don't you go? You got a negative for the season.
Sky Moore.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, every route that he ran the first 3 weeks was wrong. Between the few drops that he had, which he didn't have nearly as many as MVS did, but he ran the wrong routes. And when he run the wrong route, it causes everybody else to jump off their routes because they're trying to help the quarterback out. Because the quarterback's in trouble now because he's fucked up. Joe said glass slipper expectations. That's what Quentin brought up early was Tony. But I think Sky Moore really, you know, after last year, I thought he was really going to step up. He turned into 2020 McColl, where he was very arrogant. Thought he was the king because he had a ring on his finger. He made a play in the Super Bowl. He did a few things. And then all of a sudden he went backwards. And that's not practicing as hard, not doing the things that he should be doing.
It's surprising how he sort of fell back. Yeah. I was a big proponent of Sky Moore, the Chiefs drafting Sky Moore.
Me too. I was dancing about it.
I was excited about a guy who seemed to have great route running skills, big hands, made contested catches in college. I thought that he was sort of a perfect fit, and not just for the offense, but for the skill set Kansas City needed at the time when he got drafted. So, you know, he's still got some time left on his contract. He can change that narrative, but it's going to take a hell of a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of work in the offseason and you know, training camp and everything, because he dug himself a hole. There's time to dig out, but in order to get yourself out of the hole, you got to first stop digging. And my man still's got a shovel in his hand. So
he does. He does.
This coming year is an opportunity for him to figure it out. And I still think that the skill set is there, you know.
It has to be there, man. The guy dropped one ball in 4 years of college. He dropped one pass. I mean, the skill set has to be there. This is all a mental thing with him and not really putting the work in to make himself better. That's what it really looks like to me, and that's what I've kind of heard from people, is that he kind of fell off. And when I say he's a lot like 2020 McColl, that's what McColl did. McColl got very, very high on himself after that Super Bowl, after having a really good rookie season. Didn't want to go to Pat camp, didn't want to practice as much, was playing video games, fucking asking me how to take care of a lizard and do all this weird shit on Twitter, constantly doing spaces and all of that stuff. And that's what got him booted out of here. And luckily he was humbled, because Aaron Rodgers said, sorry, I don't like you on the field. I don't want you here anymore, even though Aaron Rodgers was a playing, and he was booted out of there. So we brought him back, which was we got him for nothing, so it doesn't really matter. I think he showed out last week, and I think he can show out again.
Yeah, let's see. Opportunities are going to be there. You know, that's my big point about this wide receiver room, is I think the skill sets are there for everybody, but it's just what's the opportunities going to be? And I think that McColl has proven that, you know, he's still got it. The opportunities are still there for him. Let's see what he has, especially if you're going to, you know, depending on who's healthy or who's not healthy in the wide receiver room moving forward, you know, the opportunities are going to be there. So I'm excited about that. I think that's a big story heading into Saturday, and that's something we're going to expand on Thursday.
Correct.
Okay. My negative.
What's your negative?
JP, can we have an honest conversation? Just me and you. Two bros.
If you say Justin Ross, I'm going to hang up on you.
Can we talk about the Swiftie cam as a negative?
The what?
I know I just brought up the Swifties being a positive and the group expanding Chiefs Kingdom, but it was bad there for a minute, okay? It was every commercial break. It was every touchdown. It was every time they would be like, that. Travis on the sideline, Swiftie up in the suite. It was like, oh, hey, there's you know, Brittany Mahomes hanging out with T. Swift. And it's like, I'm here to watch a football game, okay? Can we take a timeout on that? Both things can be true. Okay,
it's both true. Things can that, be true. That part is true.
We're expanding the kingdom. I'm not here to watch her face in the suite every single time.
But you got to yell at CBS about that.
Especially, it was really, really bad in that Bears game. We were blowing them out. It was like 41-10 or 13 or something, and they just That cameraman could not get enough of T-Smith.
I don't think he knew what to do with himself. I mean, look, man, that's the closest probably any of those people have ever been to.
That camera should have been sponsored. It should have been like, here's the Swift Cam, sponsored by Bud Light or whatever. I don't know. Come up with a brand, a Taylor Swift brand friendly camera. You know, like the Walmart 4K Skycam. It should have been the Walmart 4K Swift Cam. That's what it should have been. All right. It was getting bad. Both things can be true, chat. Don't be coming at me. All right.
That is true. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. In fact, we missed a really good fight because they were painting on Taylor Swift. I remember the game. And I wanted to see what the fight was about, but they were too busy staring at Taylor Swift. I get all of that. They did calm it down. But, you know, you can't blame her because, as she stated, she doesn't know when the cameras are on her. She's not there to be filmed. She's there to watch a football game and support Travis. So CBS has a narrative that they were going for, and they found out that it pissed a lot of people off, especially non-Chiefs fans and non-Swifties. I am not a Swiftie. I don't listen to her music. My daughter and my wife do. That's fantastic. If you like her music, that's great. It sucks on a long road trip, I will tell you that. Between Taylor Swift and Pink, I want to shoot myself or throw myself out onto the highway. I can't
just take those feelings and shake it off. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It just is what it is. I mean, they calmed it down. You know, she was the last few games she's been to, they panned on her a couple of times. The what the fuck moment was pretty good when Travis did his acting job in the end zone. That was pretty comical. Because she honestly thought he got knocked down and he was just, you know, I'm sure he had to tell her after the game, you know, I was just acting. Because he is a damn good actor. So it is what it is. But you're right. I agree with you. She's been great for it, but it did hurt a little bit when people were watching the Chiefs games. What do you say? He said, JB going to pull a Lady Bird. His family if they play another Swift. You're right. I swear. I mean, I will open the window.
Those are the two Taylor Swift songs that I know. No more puns for the rest of the show because that's it. Those are the only two songs I know. There's a song called Karma and there's a song called Shake It Off. That's it.
Yeah,
that's the extent of my Taylor Swift knowledge.
Pretty good. Pretty good. And see, I didn't catch the first one because I didn't know that was a song. I did, but I didn't remember it until you brought it up.
We are what you would call culturally challenged on this show.
Yeah. I'm sorry I don't listen. I mean, I listen to old R&B music and rap. That's what I have listened to. I mean, old rap, old R&B, that's what I grew up on. That's what I listen to. I still listen to it to this day. Throw me some Earth, Wind, and Fire on, I'm happy as a motherfucker. Throw me some Snoop Dogg, I'm happy as hell.
Spotify does this thing where it gives you your top five listens at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Four of the five songs were from artists that were popular or like really popular in the 80s and, you know, 70s.
Yeah.
I had like it was a Metallica song, it was ZZ Top. Like it was that sort of that's the music that I listened to.
Well, and see that's what I mean, like I grew up on Chicago, you know, the Eagles, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Stevie Wonder, all of these guys that I still listen to this day. You know, I'm sorry if this pisses the chat off. I'm not a Drake fan. I don't like any of his music. I am not any of the new rappers fans, to be honest with you. I don't like any of their music. I think most of them sound like they're just dragging words out and saying things to say it. But, you know, that's just what I listen to. It is what it is. I mean, like, fuck, Steven Tyler was one of my favorites. You know, I mean, it is what it is. I loved Aerosmith. I loved Kiss. I went to the Kiss concert. I mean,
at Sandstone.
Dude, it was great at Sandstone. Fucking great concert.
I know. I say Sandstone because it shows your age because that thing has been changed. I don't even know what it's called now. I only know that it's called Sandstone because, you know, my dad will be like, oh, I went to just all these concerts back at Sandstone on the day.
Well, we had friends that owned that. So we were able to get in. My wife's family ran all of the stage production and then our friend owned it. So we were able to get in there for free. So when I was a kid, we didn't pay to go to any of those concerts. Now here's a sad thing. Talk about a jealous older brother. So I go to this Kiss concert. I get the Kiss trash can, you know, the round one that's about that. It's not really a trash can. It's about this tall, about that big around. And it's got all of the Kiss members on it from Gene Simmons, everybody all the way around it. And it had the name of the tour on it. I bring it home and they signed it for me. Gene Simmons signed it. Paul Stanley signed it. Everybody signed it. I was like, fuck yeah, look at me. I go home. I bring the trash can in my room. I set the son of a bitch down. My brother comes walking. He goes, what's that? I said, it's a trash can. Don't fuck with it. Okay. He kicks it and puts a giant dent in it.
Oh my God, dude.
Dude, I chased him down the fucking steps. Now this is my seven. He's 7 years older than I am. I was 13 at the time. I chased him down my mom and dad's steps and I threw him into a fucking book stand that had metal leaves coming off of it. And one of the metal leaves stuck into his head. My dad said, what the hell's going on? I said, he kicked my trash can. He goes, you put a hole in his head because he kicked your trash can? I said, it's not just any trash can, Dad. Fuck. I mean, come on.
You don't know me. You don't know how I live.
You don't know me at all, you son of a bitch. But no, it was I love that can. And I kept it, and I tried everything to get that dent out. But he creased it. I was so pissed, dude. So fucking mad. Nothing topped him using my signed Nolan Ryan baseball out in the empty lot, though. That was probably the worst thing he ever did. That got his ass kicked good. But regardless, it is what it is. Yeah, I mean, the Swifty thing is what it is. They're going to continue to be around as long as Travis Kelce's around. And then they're going to continue to be Chiefs fans because Travis Kelce is always going to be a Chiefs fan.
Yeah.
He's always going to live in Kansas City.
You're going to be on the top of the mountain for the next decade.
Exactly.
So, by the way, you may not always walk away with a ring and a trip to Disney World, but you'll always be on the top of the mountain.
That's right. That's
the way it's going to be. So
Nick Wright has Lamar Jackson on the top of Mahomes Mountain, and Mahomes is like third.
Lamar Jackson's going to win the MVP, but you know what?
He's got to win a playoff game.
He's still the best quarterback in the playoffs.
Yeah, right now he is. So, with the weapons he's got, hell yeah, he is. That's all I've got. Oh, real quick, I don't know if you guys noticed, Chris Jones made a comment. I wanted to bring this up really quick. He made a comment saying Saturday may be his last game. He doesn't know. He said, you never know, but it may be my last game in Arrowhead. I wouldn't take that with too much. We know how Chris Jones does things.
Yeah, that's the perfect response to that. Just exactly. Move on. Just move past it. Don't take the bait.
Don't read into it. Don't go on his page and cuss him out and do all this shit that fucking fans do. Just leave him alone. Somebody said on Twitter today that Tony needs to get his confidence back. Well, it's pretty hard to do when you're constantly getting berated by everybody and you're 23 years old. You're still a kid in your mind and you don't want that kind of negativity. So go on. If you want to do anything positive, go on Tony's page and say, hey man, I'm glad you're back. Let's see you go out there and make a couple touchdowns. Do something. You know, I want to see whatever it is. Just make him feel good about himself. He needs that. Just like everybody goes on Chris Jones's page and says, please don't leave. Please don't leave. This is what he needs. Go out there and give Tony some encouragement, you guys, because I think he's definitely going to play this week. And if he does, we want him at the top of his game. So that being said, that's all I've got, too.
All right, make sure everybody come back on Thursday. We're going to do first playoff game, right? So we're going to talk a lot. We're going to talk a lot of Chiefs Dolphins. At that point, we're going to get another update to the injury report. More about the Dolphins side of things because they are broken right now
in terms of
their injuries. So we'll come back. We'll talk about the game up on Thursday and hope to see everybody then. With that, have a good night, Chiefs Kingdom.
Peace out, everybody.